This is a WKXL Spotlight. I'm your host, Jim McIntyre, and as I tend to do every now and then on the airwaves, I try to educate the listeners of WKXL Radio in a space that there's a ton of confusion in. And today I've enlisted the help of an individual who I think can help to clear up some confusion in people's minds. I have with us today Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Digital. He's the managing partner. Mark, welcome to the show.
No, thanks for having me on. Excited for the conversation.
Yeah, so as am I, elated actually, because crypto, it's such a huge, confusing world to so many people out there, and even the folks that think they know a ton about the space, Mark, I think some of them, like myself, are really confused in certain areas, so I'm hoping with your expertise, you can provide some clarity on a couple of specific topics I have as we go along, but can you maybe open up the show here by telling people a little bit about your background and as it pertains to crypto specifically?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say I don't do short very well, Jim, but I'll try to do the super short version this time. So, look, I grew up on the left coast up in Seattle. Used to listen to WGN radio from the big tower way back in the 70s. That was my love of radio. So I do love doing these kind of shows. And then went to school in the Midwest and Notre Dame in Chicago and ended up working in an insurance company. Happy accident. The guy doing investments retired and said, hey, you can take over. So I managed bonds for a while. Then I went to an equity shop. And then I went back to the alma mater. I went back to Notre Dame and I helped run the endowment. And the big epiphany there was we were big investors in venture capital. And this was the early to mid-90s. And we invested in all the now famous venture capital funds out in Silicon Valley. And we got lucky. We invested in a few companies you might have heard of, something like Google and eBay and Yahoo. And I tell the story, we put $500K into this little company called Google. And it was like, what do we need, the 21st search engine? What's wrong with Ask Jeeves? And what's wrong with Web Crawler? Well, that $500K turned into $200 million. There should be a quad at Notre Dame called the Google Quad. And the light bulb went on that investing in infrastructure about the evolution of computing power, and what I mean by that is computing started in the 1950s, 1954 with the mainframe, and then 1968, there was innovation around microchips, so we had smaller computers, as big as a room instead of as big as a building. And then in 82, where I grew up in Seattle, they had this thing called the personal computer with this company, Microsoft. And then in 96, this thing came along called the Internet. And you remember Paul Krugman said, it'll never be more important than a fax machine. Little more important. So the Internet created $2 trillion of value, trillion with a T, and companies like Google and Intel and the like. And fast forward another 14 years, the mobile net came along, and I had left Notre Dame. I was working down here in North Carolina, where I live now, running the endowment, and we invested in a bunch of little companies like Facebook and Alibaba. Wow. And they transformed the way we all interact, right? We all walk around with a little mini supercomputer in our hands. And now, 2024, which is this new cycle, we've got the digital age. So we're entering the age of internet computing beyond just media and commerce, but with value. And so, I got exposed to digital assets a decade ago. I was slow. I was skeptical at first in 2013. I joke, I wasn't running drugs on Silk Road. I didn't know what cryptography was. And everyone told you all that, cryptocurrency was for drug dealers and terrorists and bad people. Well, think about it, Jim. Every new technology starts on the fringe, right? Who was the first person to have a pager? Drug dealers. Who was the first industry to use the internet? Ones we don't like to talk about on a family radio channel.
Right.
So it always starts on the fringe, and then it becomes ubiquitous. And so the idea that there's this new technology that allows you and I to transfer value to one another without a third party. And this is the key point. You know, for 800 years, you and I and everybody else listening has been reliant on the banking system for trust. And what do I mean by that? So in the old days, if I lent you money, right, and I'm super old, so I wrote down on my papyrus tablet that you owed me money, you came back to pay me principal plus interest. And if I'm an unscrupulous guy, I could have just changed my ledger, my accounting record. And there were no double entry accounting. There was the single entry accounting. And you had to trust me. And it turns out I wasn't trustworthy.
Yeah, I already paid you back. I already paid you back that money, Mark.
Exactly. And so the Medicis came along 800 years ago and said, you know what, Jim, why don't you keep a ledger? And Mark, you keep a ledger. And we, the benevolent Medicis, for a small fee, will make sure that the ledgers match. So there can't be any he said, she said. But the problem is, during the year that you're earning your interest to come pay me back, I go to the Medicis and say, you know what, guys? I'm going to change my number to 200, and I'll give you half of the profits that we steal from Jim.
Hey.
Well, they're like, hey, done. So you come back to pay me the 100. I say, hey, but you owe me 200. And you go, hey, the Medicis, what? Oh, Jim, you must have written the number down wrong. We're sorry. And so the trust industry, and I'm using a hyperbolic example for a reason.
It makes sense. It's excellent. Go ahead.
99% of the time, we can trust the bank, right? We can trust the institutions that keep the accounting records. But here's the thing. I have this recurring nightmare, not like every night, but once or twice a year. I go to the ATM, and I punch in my code, and it says zero. Like, how would I prove it's not zero? I don't have a statement anymore. It's their word against mine, so I'm trusting that they don't take my money. Because here's the problem. Once I put it in the bank, it's actually no longer my money. It's the bank's money. And I have an IOU, and that IOU is good 99.9% of the time. But on occasion, bad people do bad things, and banks go out of business. And so along comes this great technology called the blockchain and Bitcoin. And what it allows is a third ledger, a third set of books run on this massive decentralized computer, thousands of nodes around the world, you know, resistant to shock, resistant to tampering, resistant to hacking, never been hacked one time in 15 years.
With everybody trying all the time, believe me, they did in the past, most certainly. Everybody out there been trying to take it down.
Exactly, exactly. And here's the thing. Visa, which we all use as money, right? I don't carry money around. I use my Visa card. If you have a Visa card, how many times have you had to get a new number because someone stole the card?
Everybody's
pretty often.
All the time.
Why? Why does that happen?
It's stored in the central.
They run on a mainframe.
Yes.
Computer. Believe this is great. This is 2024. They run on a mainframe computer using a language called COBOL, which the only people that can code COBOL are 85 now. So the guy joked with me at Visa. He said, yeah, it's great because no one really knows how to hack it, except when it breaks, we have to put a light on to Sunnyvale Retirement Home and some 85-year-old comes over and fixes it. I'm like, you're not lying, because my dad, who's 86, can code COBOL and I can't. So the Visa gets hacked because it's vulnerable. Bitcoin's never been hacked. Well, why does that matter? Well, if there's three ledgers instead of two, you've got a ledger, I've got a ledger, you write down 100, I write down 100, and this independent ledger verified by these thousands of nodes around the world, no one's controlling it. There's no CEO. There's no bad person to steal from us at the bank. Not that that would happen all the time, but it does happen. And this third ledger gives us truth. And so we're moving from the trust industry, 800 years of having to trust financial institutions, to the new world of truth, where we don't have to trust anything except code. And I use a simple example. If you get lost, do you stop and ask directions? Heck no. Not here in the South, because what they say in the South, where I live, well, go to where the general store was and take a left. Then go to where the oak tree used to be and take a right. And like, I don't know where those things used to be. I wasn't here. Okay? So what do? I pull out Google Maps or Apple Maps, and I trust the code. Trusting code is superior to trusting people and corporations. And so as we think about in the old days, if I wanted to send you money, you had to have a bank account, I had to have a bank account, and we paid fees, wire transfer fees, et cetera. Now, if you have a wallet on your phone, and I have a wallet on my phone, and I send you Bitcoin with a couple taps of my keyboard, there's no intermediary, there's no third party, there's no fees. It's a better form of transferring value.
It's that simple, a better form of transferring value. We're going to roll to a commercial right now here, this WKXL Spotlight with Mark Yoskoldi, Morgan Creek Digital Managing Partner. You're listening on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, or maybe it's 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire, nhtalkradio.com. We'll be right back after this quick break. This WKXL Spotlight with Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Digital, managing partner. He knows a ton about Bitcoin. He knows a ton about crypto. And Mark, I'm as I said earlier, I'm excited to have this conversation with you. Are you cool if we drill down to like the second or third or even fourth layer of cryptocurrency, where you're talking about trading and some of the impacts that take place that cause price increases or decreases in Bitcoin, and then all the other cryptos that flow from that? Because that's a little bit of a different topic from where we kind of left off in that first segment.
Oh, absolutely. Look, we set the stage in the first segment for kind of why digital assets exist, why cryptocurrency exists, what blockchains really are. There's an extension of the operating systems that, you know, we've been developing since the 1950s. But when it comes to individual assets, whether it's Bitcoin, which is kind of the king, and then Ethereum, kind of the crown prince, and then there's a whole bunch of other princes and princesses underneath that.
Sure.
But happy to talk about any of that.
Very good. So when people hear about the reasons why Bitcoin was created and blockchain was created, as you give the overview there, and they can say, I think, okay, that makes sense. This idea makes sense, but it's tough to put it into real world play and use case and stuff like that if they have no experience. It's just an idea, like, okay, blockchain terminology, third party verifications, I guess, hacking. But how can I make money on it? That's ultimately what people are concerned about.
Yeah.
Because the ups and down cycles, and every 4 years roughly is how crypto has gone about with these up and down 4 year cycles, and we're entering in the start of one here now, I think, with the halving coming up. Do you call it halving or halving?
I call it the halving, but others call it the halving. So, but it's like potato and potato, right?
I like halving because it's different, and I just like the sound of it. And I know it kind of irritates some hardcore Bitcoin maxis that don't like that word. So I like to use halving instead of having. All right. So what my question for you is something regarding CME gaps and end of quarter options expirations, which we're approaching one tomorrow. And I think I had read on Binance.com that tomorrow is going to be the largest quarterly expiration amount of money that's kind of being held in play for both Bitcoin and Ethereum. That most people don't understand how much the futures trading really impacts the price of Bitcoin as those dates approach. Are you able to give a simplified overview of that at all?
Sure. So the simplest way to think about this is, thinking about commodities broadly. So in the olden days, right? And I mean like the really olden days.
Like 5 years ago.
You and I would negotiate terms of barter, right? Let's say you had chickens and I had cows. There was no money. There were no coins, there were no currency, there were no banknotes, there were no banks. And we would meet at the marketplace, and you would bring your chickens, and I would bring my cows, and we would trade. And after a while, people said, you know, this is kind of a hassle, and it's bad for the roads, and you know, there's stuff everywhere. And so why don't you print some coins, some tokens, and you put chickens on yours, and I'll put, you know, cows on mine, and then we'll meet at the marketplace, and we'll exchange a certain number of tokens, and then we can exchange for the animals later. Well, the problem with that is, you know, you're toting this big sack of coins to the market, you're vulnerable to theft, right? The bad guys could come and take your stuff. So the banks sprung up, you know, 1,000 years ago and said, hey, we'll hold those coins and we'll give you these, they were called flying money at the time because they, a piece of paper, they'd fly away in the wind. And, you know, we'll give you these notes to say you have this many coins on deposit and you can exchange these notes. And so we started to move towards a system of paper currency. Well, that's all well and good, because in those days, you had your chickens and I had my cows. Well, let's say I diversify and now I'm drilling for oil. And now I want to sell you a barrel of oil. Well, again, in the olden days, if I sold you a barrel of oil and we had a contract that I had to deliver you a barrel of oil, I had to put it on a train and it would go up to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and you would go pick it up there with a truck. And there actually had to be a physical exchange of the commodity. And so for me to sell you a barrel of oil, I had to have a barrel of oil. And it was pretty easy to track who had barrels of oil and who wanted to buy them. And the supply and demand, you know, for goods and services, the price was set by the marginal buyer and seller. Easy. Well, then these really smart people in New York and other places, Chicago, came up with derivatives. Now, what's a derivative? A derivative is a different type of contract that derives its value from the underlying asset. So I could have a call option, which gives me the option to buy a stock at a fixed price, or a put option, which gives me the option to sell a stock or a piece of commodity at a certain price. Or I could have a futures contract, which sets a price and a date certain future that you and I will exchange. So you had all these new paper commodities suddenly introduced. So if you think about it, in the old days, I used to have a barrel of oil to sell to you. Now, I can just say, you know what? I'm going to sell you a paper barrel of oil. And as long as we settle up the contract before I actually have to put the oil on the train up to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, everything's good. Well, what's not so good about that? Well, now, how do we count how many barrels of oil there are? Because we got to count all these contracts, some of them are for real barrels of oil, some of them are for paper barrels of oil. And so by having these derivative instruments, it's a good thing for certain producers. Like, let's say I'm a oil producer and I want to hedge my risk against oil prices, which are very volatile. So I use these futures contracts to sell my future production. So I'm locking in today's price. I take all the volatility out. And you on the other side are what's called a speculator. Speculator is just the opposite side of a hedger. So you asked me for simple, I'm giving you a long explanation.
Yeah, it's okay.
But the key is that when in the old days when it was just a commodity-based market, whether that commodity was wheat or cattle or chickens or bitcoins, because they're a commodity, or gold, then we could decide the price based on incremental supply and demand. When the futures get involved, you have these dates, like you talk about tomorrow, where these futures contracts expire, and everybody's scrambling the day before to settle up these contracts. And what ends up happening is a phenomenon where you can have excess demand or excess supply. Excess demand would push the price higher. Excess supply would push the price lower than the actual amount of the commodity. And you see this in the gold market all the time, is gold prices get manipulated, shall we say, by the big financial institutions that use these contracts to lower the price or raise the price so that they can skim off arbitrage profits. But that harms the actual owners of gold or the actual producers of gold. And now the same thing's happening in digital assets like Bitcoin as the markets became more evolved and we created these derivative products in addition to just you and I buying and selling Bitcoin between the two of us.
Using the futures trading market, that's heavily incorporating leverage, isn't it, to a certain degree?
Oh, my gosh. And that's another really important point. I'm glad you brought that up. So, again, if I have a barrel of oil in the ground and I have to deliver it to you, you know, there's no leverage. If I borrow money from the bank to buy that barrel of oil, now I've got leverage. Well, a futures contract is even crazier. To trade a futures contract, I have to put down a certain amount of margin, meaning collateral, in the futures exchange. Well, there's rules that it's somewhere between 1% and 3%. And sometimes you have to put a little more, but usually you only have to put 1% to 3% of collateral down to trade these paper futures.
There we go. Mark, we're going to go to commercial. I want people to hold this in their mind. We're talking 1% to 3%, and I'm just going to build this up because when we come back from commercial break, Mark Yusko is going to drop a hammer, and we're going to have some aggressive and exciting back and forth detail on what happens in crypto that just so few people understand. You want to get educated, stay right here. This WKXL Spotlight with Mark Yusko. You're listening on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. This is New Hampshire Talk Radio. Are you as excited as I am? I hope so. You're about to hear some serious knowledge being dropped from the managing partner at Morgan Creek Digital. If you see him, you watch CNBC, he's on in the morning shows. This guy's a heavy hitter. People know he knows a ton about Bitcoin, crypto, investing. Mark Yusko, you were just talking to us about futures contracts, and it's 1% to 3% sometimes is the margin. So that's like what you're risking to get in the game as a starting point, essentially, on these trades. I'll let you word it in your own words here.
Yeah, so look, leverage is a tool, right? It's one of the four ways you can make money. All right, only four ways you can make money in the world. One is you can loan someone money. You can buy a bond. And you don't get paid a lot for that because there's not a lot of risk. Second thing you do is you can invest in equity, get a little more risk, a little more return. The third way is to invest in illiquidity, you know, private equity, private real estate, private, and you get paid a little more for illiquidity. And the fourth tool for making money is leverage. Well, let's use your house, right? If you put 100% down, pay cash for your house, and your house goes up 10%, you make 10%. Pretty simple. But if you have a traditional mortgage where you put 20% down, 80% mortgage, and the price goes up 10%, you didn't make 10%. You made 50%, 10 divided by 20. Well, imagine if you only put 10% down. Now you just made 100%. So leverage amplifies the gains. Oh, wait a second. It also amplifies the losses, right? If you, during the financial crisis, or right before the financial crisis, people put 1% down to get a house.
0%.
Borrowed.
What are you talking
99%.
About? Mark, I was in the mortgage industry back then. I was getting people cash back to buy houses.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy, right? So let's do that, right? If you're 100% okay, mortgage, so no zero down to buy a house, if the price goes up 10%, you're making it infinite, right? 10 divided by zero. But what if the price goes down 10%? Well, now you've got negative equity. You've lost money, and you're losing it at an infinite pace. So the crazy thing about futures contracts is they work exactly the same. And when things are good, right, if you buy a futures contract and you put your 3% collateral, you get 33 times leverage, and the price goes up, you make 33 times more, not 33% more, 33 times more. But if you put 1% down, now we're talking 100-to-1 leverage. And so when you look back at digital assets, crypto, in the really parabolic moves, you know, the big bull markets that preceded the big bear markets, the crashes, you saw these crazy moves. Like you go back to the last cycle, you know, we went from $10,000 per Bitcoin all the way up to $68,000 a Bitcoin. And it happened in a matter of weeks. I remember that Thanksgiving like it was yesterday. Everybody was psyched and happy. And and then suddenly Elon tweeted that, you know, he didn't like it as much anymore as he liked Dogecoin. And it went down 50% in less than 8 weeks. Now, you think, well, why is it so volatile? Well, volatility is an indication of uncertainty of outcomes. So when things are not volatile, so let's take treasuries. If I buy a T-bill 31 days from now, I'm 99.99999% guaranteed that the government's going to pay me my interest. They almost never default. So there's no uncertainty about payment. Therefore, there's almost no volatility in those assets. Let's take a stock like Amazon. Amazon, surprisingly, has been a public company for 28 years. It's had a double-digit drawdown every single year of its existence. The average, Jim, 31%. So on average, every year that you've held Amazon, you've lost 31% of your money. Well, when was the right time to sell? Well, that would be never. Well, who bought it 28 years ago and held it to today? There's only five people in the world: Jeff, his mom, his dad, his ex-wife, and this guy, Bill Miller, famous value manager. So why do people sell? Why don't they just hold? The volatility. It freaks them out. The volatility of Amazon is 8080. It's the same, interestingly, as Bitcoin. So Bitcoin started at zero 15 years ago, well, 0.003 cents. And today it's closing in on $70,000 per coin. Like, well, whoa, wait a second. What about all the volatility? It went up, it went down, it went up 80%, it went down 50%, it went up 60%, it went down 84% multiple times. But again, volatility is just uncertainty about future outcomes. And when people didn't understand Amazon, it was super volatile. People don't understand Bitcoin, it's super volatile.
The volatility, what people don't understand is it revolves around scheduled dates. And when you talk about quarterly expirations, like there's a date tomorrow where the futures contracts that people have investments in are going to expire. And you have incredibly wealthy people betting on one side and incredibly wealthy people doing similar trades just on the other side. So it forces both groups to kind of come to the mean because there's so much money on both sides. If one side just totally cleans up, that means the other side's getting crushed. And actually, some businesses are betting on both sides from a price perspective that it's going to go above a certain amount and below. So that's why there's a magnet in the middle. And I think the Max Payne number for tomorrow, Mark, is somewhere in the $69,000 ballpark. Here's what I'm telling people. I heard that number at the beginning of March. So when Bitcoin raced up to 74,000 and change a couple of weeks ago, I'm sitting here going, well, it's going to come back. When everybody else is talking, we might go straight to 100. I'm like, no. The quarterly options expiration is a magnet. Once that magnet is removed tomorrow, then it's like free market time for a little bit.
Really important point. So no asset goes up in a straight line. I should say no equity-related asset. Bond markets, they do go up in a straight line until bad things happen, like rising interest rates, and then you can lose money in bonds. But for equity-related assets, and you know, Bitcoin and digital assets are more commodity-like, but they're similar to equities, same as oil or natural gas or other commodities. They trade with higher volatility. And exactly to your point, if you look at the chart of crude oil, it doesn't go up every day or down every day. It goes up sharply for a few weeks and then corrects. And then it goes up some more and then it corrects. And sometimes the corrections are really big. If there's a geopolitical event or Saudi Arabia makes a change in their supply. And ultimately, it's about, as you said, supply and demand. There are people on one side who are betting that the price is going to rise. There are people on the other side betting that it's going to fall. And then there are these institutions, these groups in the middle. I don't know if people have watched the movie Dumb Money, but it's so good, and everyone should watch it. And it gives you a glimpse into, no matter what you or I believe about, you know, about GameStop or any other asset, should it go higher or lower, there's somebody in the middle who always gets paid, the brokers and the exchanges. And so because they have these dates certain, once a quarter or once a month on the other expiration dates, you're going to have this, and I love your term, magnet. You're going to have this magnet that pulls the price to wherever the consensus is on those contracts. But once those dates are removed, then we go back to price discovery. And that price discovery, over time, if the asset is being adopted, right, if more people are using oil, or there's more demand for oil, or the economy is growing, exactly, oil prices will gently rise. If if we have really hot weather in the winter, the price of natural gas might gently fall. And as more and more people discover things like Bitcoin or Ethereum or Solana or other things, the prices will gently rise in those free market periods, punctuated by really serious bouts of volatility around the expiration dates.
That's what's happening in the price of Bitcoin just in the last 24 hours. I mean, I've seen incredible spikes, Bitcoin going from like 71,000 down to almost 69,000 within a matter of like 15 minutes, half an hour. It's because people are closing out and dealing on these futures contracts in advance of tomorrow. And this is the type of communication and topic, discussion, Mark, that like the common investor doesn't have any idea about, because maybe in crypto they got burnt at the height of the last bull run when the news and the noise is all around there. Oh, I'm going to put some money into Bitcoin, and they don't understand how it all goes down. It's like it was the major players at the top with all the crypto and with all the money that caused it to come cascading down. And that's a piece where, as we roll to commercial here, I'm just planting a seed I might look to talk a little bit more about. This is WKXL Spotlight with Mark Yusko. Has been absolutely incredible. Morgan Creek Digital, he's a managing partner there. This is 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, NewHampshireTalkRadio.com. This WKXL Spotlight rolls on. Today we're putting a spotlight right on Mark Yusko, and we're going to have some fun with these last 10 minutes of discussion. You can tell he knows a ton about the investment world. Mark, thank you so much for coming on and sharing the knowledge. Are you ready to really give people some knowledge about cryptocurrency and what happens in the trading world?
Absolutely. Let's lightning round it.
So 2 weeks ago, I talked to a crew of my friends, and on a Saturday, I saw the price of Bitcoin Cash jump from $400 up to $450 within a matter of like 10 minutes. And I said, boy, that's happening on a Saturday. Isn't that interesting? What's going on? So I bought some. It proceeds to go up to $500 within a couple days. And then when the downturn happened a week and a change ago, just went down a little bit, it drops down to $400. And I'm like, huh, well, last week there's an announcement about, I think on Monday, I think it might be Robinhood, but there's going to be some sort of futures trading coming on, I think, with Dogecoin, Bitcoin Cash, and it might be Litecoin. And if you look at the prices of those coins right now, they're all up a ton. Like today, Doge is up 15%, Bitcoin Cash up like 30% in the last couple of days. And I said, the reason I bought it that time is I'm like, somebody with big money is making big moves in this space. I don't know why, but something's coming. And you won't hear that discussion on any other radio program, any YouTube channel, except right here with my discussion with you. Why do you think Bitcoin Cash jumped up 2 weeks ago?
As you said, it's adoption, right? Increasing number of tokens and projects are becoming institutionally attractive, and the way that happens is is by introducing these futures. But you highlighted something that's really important about the futures. And, you know, we've seen the Bitcoin ETF, and now they're speculating what will be next for the ETFs. What happens in the ETF world is, you know, ETFs only get to trade at the end of every day. And so you see these crazy spikes that you mentioned before the last break that happen right before the end of the trading day or over a weekend. You're like, well, why is that happening? Well, it's because the traditional markets are closed. The ETFs can't operate when the markets are closed or over the weekend. But the futures markets are open. The traditional trading markets are open. This is a global business, 24/7. And so there is this strange dynamic that big institutions, right, can sell in the futures market these tokens, whether it's Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin or anything else, and push the price down so that when the market opens the next day, they get to buy at a cheaper price.
Bingo.
I say it's the oldest trick in the book. Like, if you want to buy a lot of something, you don't just start buying it. If you're a big institution and you have sway in the markets, you actually tell people you're selling it or that you don't like it. So the price goes down, you can buy more. So one quick thing on these assets, whether, again, Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin, Ethereum, the way I think about it is I did a CNBC engagement last night with Melissa Lee. 5 years ago, I was on the same show, Fast Money. And while I was on the show, I was only on the show for like 6 minutes. While I was on the show, the price fell like, you know, $2,000, went from 10,000 to 8,000. And she said, oh my gosh, look at all this volatility. What should we do? And I turned around and I said, buy it. And she says, what? You always say that. What if it went to 5,000? I'd buy it. But buy it today, buy it tomorrow, buy it next week, buy it next month. Don't buy it all at once. What you want to do with these assets is you want to accumulate over time a position in these very, very valuable networks, because what they are is a better form of saving, right? They protect you against the devaluation of the currency by the government as they print more and more dollars. And the easiest way to think about that is your house, right? I live in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. According to Zillow, my house went up 50% in the last year. No, it didn't. My house didn't grow. It didn't get better. It actually wore out a little bit. I had to put money into it. What happened is the money got worse. So by owning these digital assets, you're protecting yourself against currency devaluation. So just buy a little bit every week and accumulate a position just like you would a savings account.
So let's talk about this with the price of Bitcoin. Why, when the price of Bitcoin goes down, do so many of the altcoins go down even more aggressively?
It's like small cap stocks versus large cap stocks. Great insight, right? And if you think about, I was a wrestler in high school, and my coach had this great line, where the head goes, the body follows. So if you want them to go to the left side of the mat, push their head to the left side of the mat. So if you're watching altcoins, you're watching the smaller cap tokens, they are going to follow like the tail, the head wagging the tail, of the big tokens.
Is it automatic trading though, Mark? Is like what's the indicator? Because it's not that a handful of the altcoins move when Bitcoin does. It's they all do in like rapid fire at the same time. So it has to be computer programming, AI, or whatever it is.
It is.
Okay.
It's computerized trading. It's leverage unwinding. When things go down, right, they all go down together, whether it's in the stock market, the bond market, the crypto market. And that's normally what's called a liquidation adjustment. So you have everyone who bought using leverage, like we talked about earlier, and then you get a margin call. And if people don't meet the margin call, their assets get taken over and sold immediately through program trading. And so one of the things they talk about is in down markets, all correlations go to one. What it means is even if you have assets that don't move together normally, when people are panicking or the institutions are selling on people's behalf, they all go down together.
Okay, Mark, we got probably 1 to 2 minutes. I love that I can ask questions that in my mind, I just am like, getting crazy. Like, I don't understand what's going on with this. And then you just have a calm, centered, hey, Jim, here's what's going on. What do you expect to happen with the price of the halving, the price of Bitcoin here as we roll in towards the halving coming up in a couple of weeks? I will predict the Bitcoin price drops shortly after, because halving doesn't mean a decreased supply. It means a decrease in the rate of new supply being added onto the market, and that in and of itself does not, cause a price justification. So I'm curious.
Yeah, I'll take the other side. History tells us that the halving is really unique, and I think it's one of the most genius things ever created inside Bitcoin. So every 4 years, the number of block rewards gets cut in half. Well, the miners are the ones that are paid the block rewards. The miners are the computer network operators that secure the network. They make the network safe. So their costs are fixed. So if the supply of block rewards goes down, a bunch of those miners would go out of business. So naturally, the price of Bitcoin rises to keep the miners fully compensated. And what it does, it basically doubles the fair value. So if the fair value today, I think, is around 50,000, I think it'll double to 100,000. Now, it won't go up quite as much this time because now the miners can get paid transaction fees, which is a topic for another day.
And everybody's in on it, and everybody has the same views, because the last three halvenings, the price on the day of the halvening a year later has been up ridiculous percentage amounts. So everybody that's in the game knows, hey, if you put it in on the halvening a year from now, you're going to have more money. That's when crypto industry turns things upside down, because all the traders are operating on the same mindset, and the people with whales at the top of the totem pole control things and can take advantage of that to drop the price for their own benefit, because they're making short trades and cash in on those short trades.
100%. Look, if everybody's thinking the same way, then there's not a lot of thinking going on. And you're right. On short-term time horizons, there can be lots of volatility.
Exactly.
But over the long term, right, over the next 9 to 12 months,
yes,
I think we drift higher, punctuated by a pretty exciting period. Maybe we should get together over Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I think before then, before the election, before the election, Mark, because listen, both parties in the government of the United States want, especially one side wants a nice, good economy, roaring economy heading into the beginning of November, and a accelerating crypto environment certainly would help to create that in here, wouldn't it?
Amen. Amen. So we'll look forward to that, and we'll get together again.
You're the man. Thank you so much, Mark Yusko. I really enjoy this stuff. The rapid fire stuff, I think, would be great TV between you and me. What do you think about that?
We'll make that happen sometime. All right.
I'm into it. Thanks again. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. You've heard it here. Mark Yusko from Morgan Creek Digital. He's a managing partner there. He's a guy with a lot of knowledge, and you'll see him if you turn your TV to CNBC every now and then on my radio or my TV out here. It's channel 795, I think, for Comcast, and I watch them every day in the morning. There's a good show over there. They talk crypto a bunch. They talk about all investments. Like Mark had said, every investment is risky. You got to be careful, and you got to do homework, and even then, you got to get lucky. But hopefully you can read the tea leaves a little bit and say, okay, I think this is a decent time, and just slowly wade into the waters. Because long term, just seems to me, Bitcoin is probably going to win. Never been hacked. Look at the rate of growth. Look at all the money moving into it from the big financial companies. I just kind of like to be on those people's side sometimes. WKXL Radio, you're listening. 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord. Look down at the radio dial, 101.9 FM in Manchester. This is where you come to learn some good stuff. NewHampshireTalkRadio.com.